A seatbelt can stop you from going into a store. A seatbelt can stop you from climbing a tree. It can stop you from flying or from rolling down a hill. A seatbelt can stop you from doing a lot of things, like crushing bones and damaging vital organs. It can even save your life. That's why we enforce seatbelt laws, to save lives. So buckle up every trip, every time. Click it or ticket. Paid for by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Hello and welcome.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Backline Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, recaps, previews, interviews. Hey, we talk anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week, I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Hey, we are here. Are you there?
I am here.
Hey, Carlos, we got another Players Championships in the books. The PGA Tour now heads for Texas for a couple of weeks before moving north to Ohio for the Memorial, where our VIG tonight, Greg Norman, will be the honoree. Can't wait for that. But before we get started tonight, Carlos, I got a question for you. I know you love these. I got a question for you. At what course and what tournament did Tiger Woods make his PGA debut in 1996?
PGA debut in 1996. Wasn't it at Riviera? No?
Well, he was like 15 when he played at Riviera, but he was still an amateur. I'm sorry, when he was a professional in 1996.
No, that one I don't recall it right now.
Well, you know, that's when he said hello world and all that good stuff. And it was at Brown Deer Park in the Greater Milwaukee Open. He made a hole in one that week, made the cut, finished T60, and I got to play there today, Carlos. So,
really?
I want to give a big shout out to the head professional there, Andrew Barrett, at the Brown Deer Park Golf Course and his staff here in Milwaukee for hosting us at the course today. Had a wonderful time playing the course, talking with Andrew about his plans to restore the course and make it a must play in the Wisconsin Golf Trail. And, you know, when guys come up here to the Cheesehead State to play Whistling Straits, Erin Hills, or Sandow, and the other great golf courses here in the Wisconsin area, they're going to want to play Brown Deer Park. It's a very great old classic golf course, opened in 1929. Really enjoy it a lot, Carlos.
I have a question for you then. I mean,
yeah.
What was your score in that hole that Tiger did a hole in one?
Do you know, it was a par bogey. I was a little short, chipped on. I can't remember if I made the putt or two-putted, probably two-putted. But the guy I was playing with knocked it right on the green and pin high and just missed his birdie putt. So, you know, Tiger ain't nothing. He ain't got nothing on us. We'll take him best ball.
Anytime, man.
Hey, Carlos, it was another great week at the Players' Championship. We had the youngest winner ever at Sawgrass. Ian Poulter made the best of his reprieve of earning his tour card and getting into the Players' Championship. But Sergio, Jordan, and Jason, not so much. As always, there's a lot of golf to talk about, Carlos, so let's get to it.
Well, let's get to it. And we have a very special VIG. You mentioned him, Greg Norman. He's going to be talking to us about a host of topics there. So you don't want to miss that. That's going to be the legendary great white shark, Greg Norman.
Carlos, I lost you.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, yeah, but I lost you when you started talking there about the great white shark, yeah. Now you're back. You're lost again. You're going in and out. You were great there for a minute. I'm not sure if you're back or I'm out or what. Hello, Carlos. Can you hear me? I'm going to start talking about the backs in this evening. We're going to start talking about the Players Championship. And Sehwoo Kim just stayed so cool and calm to win. He's the youngest ever to win at 21 years old. He missed 10 greens on Sunday and got it up and down time after time. Some of his bunker shots were simply brilliant. Kim had not been having a banner year his last five starts. He had a WD, he had a cut, he had a T22, he had another cut, and now the win. In 18 starts this season leading into this week, he had 7 missed cuts, 4 WDs, and only 1 top 10. His year got a lot better on Sunday, though, with the big win at the Players. He made 3 birdies on the front 9 for a 33 and then held on, saving par after par on the back 9 for the win. Pete Dye told the pros years ago, if you want to beat TPC Sawgrass, hit it in the bunkers. They're easier to play out of than the moguls or grass surrounding the greens. Kim used this strategy to perfection on Sunday. You know, we have not seen that kind of bunker play from a player on the PGA Tour for a long time. He really was on his game in the sand and around the greens. Adam Scott set the tone on Thursday when he was 6 under par after 16 holes and proceeded to give back 4 shots over the final 2 holes with double bogey, double bogey. He ended up 5 under for the week. Those 4 shots he lost on Thursday cost him a runner-up. Plus, he would have been in the mix on Sunday and maybe putting pressure on Kim. Who knows what could have happened? Disaster is always lurking at TPC Sawgrass. Kim and Brendan Steele were the only players who finished in the top 10 to break 70 on Sunday. Kim had a 69 and Steele a 68. Louis Oosthuizen, who played brilliantly up until the final round, really went backwards on Sunday. He really struggled, which was a surprise. He should have probably been a factor down to the end. Ian Poulter was a factor. He played, you know, the 72nd hole. It was quite exciting, actually. But he was also definitely playing to protect the top 5 finish and, you know, didn't seem to be too worried about really winning on Sunday, especially he had to lay up on 16. He said he had a bad lie. Brandel Chambly kind of got on his case a little bit. They got into a little Twitter fight. I'll talk about that later. But, you know, where Ian Poulter is right now in his career, I completely understand his finish on Sunday. And I have to say, that 4th shot he hit at the 18th after shanking his 2nd shot and then taking the drop from the palmetto bush, you know, that was simply magnificent. He hoisted it up over a tree and left just a little tap in for the bogey. As I mentioned, Brandel Chambly was not too kind to Poulter. He chided him on air for not going for the par 5 and 16 and 2 when he was still 2 shots behind. But, you know, he just didn't feel he could get it done. And then, of course, Poulter had to go to Twitter and his favorite form of communication and place a well-placed dig at Chambly. So, you know, they're back having a little Twitter feud again. You know, what do you expect? So, out of the players, there was 48 of the top 50 players in the 146-man field. So, I was going to ask you how you like the change at number 12. Maybe we'll get around to that after a bit. The course still showed its teeth. Disaster, as I mentioned, is just it's just one shot away there. Big numbers at number 17. J.B. Holmes dropped a couple in the water. Jason Day shot an 80. Sergio, a 78, dropped 23 spots on Sunday to T30. Jordan Spieth missed the cut. He just seemed out of sorts. Things are bothering him on the course. He's letting the bunker incident. He took a picture. That's kind of bush league, actually, making a big deal out of that. Did you see Justin Thomas' scorecard on Thursday and Friday? For a stretch of 19 holes, are you back, Carlos?
Yes,
for a stretch
am.
Of 19.
Yes, I am.
You're breaking up. You tried to say something.
No.
Come back in. Can you hear me?
I am. Yes, I am.
You're back?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now. Good.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for you to finish through.
All right. Well, let me wrap this up here. I don't know if you saw Justin Thomas' scorecard for Thursday and Friday, but for a stretch of 19 holes over Thursday and Friday, he was even par, but he only had one par. He made a double, 8 bogeys, 1 par, 8 birdies, and an eagle. And that's exactly what you get at TPC Sawgrass. A lot of excitement. You know, a lot of birdies and eagles, but also huge danger if you get out of position on the golf course. The players are under such tension to avoid the big number all week because they are just mentally drained by Sunday. And I think that's really what affected the play on Sunday. It was really lackluster for the leaders, for the guys at the on top of the leaderboard. Number 17 and 18, I mean, they're at the end of the tournament, the 71st, 72nd hole. It's almost like they're too much. They just, you know, they're just like, I mean, they look like deer lost in the headlights when they get there. It's just, but I have to give it to Sewoo Kim. I mean, he stayed calm and collected. He just seemed, you know, in the moment, just going shot to shot. He truly played the best of anybody, really, without question. There were 69 balls found in the water this week at number 17. That's the second highest number ever. And it wasn't even windy last week in Jacksonville. So, Carlos, I'm going to stop right there for a minute. I got just a little bit more to go over, but I've been talking for a long time. So maybe some things there you want to talk about or jump in there on the players.
No, basically, I mean, what you have said, Sewoo Kim definitely seemed to have been the only one who was able to tame the TPC Sawgrass. I mean, I remember when that stadium course made its debut back in 1982, the Players' Championship, those reactions were swift. It was brutal, nasty. And even I remember Jack Nicklaus saying, this course plays all around my game and never touches it. It was like, I mean, all the players had something to say. It's a tough course. Definitely, I would have expected, I don't know, I might have mixed emotions with the thing with Ian Poulter and the way and what you have said, you know, that you understand his stages in his career, but there's also this thing, you're playing to win. You know, sometimes you have to try to get some rest into it, and if you want to go for the win or not, you know, I don't know. I just don't like this play not to lose attitude, you know, and that he could have gone for some other different shots and maybe be there. I expected him plenty to be there. I mean, he was with Sewoo Kim. He was tied, and Sewoo Kim took one ahead, and yeah, Sewoo took it out to 10 under, and Ian stayed at 7 under all the way. I mean, I would have expected him to take charge and try to challenge him instead of playing it safe. So that's why, I don't know, I'm a little torn about that. What happened in 17, what Brendel says and what Ian says, I don't know. I'm not too sure. I always go, hey, just go for it. I don't care. You know, it's if you're going to win and if you're good enough, you're going to make it. And the talk about the number 12, you know, that hole was shortened from 358 to 302, and it's now a supposedly drivable par 4. You know, those mounds along the left side that were removed and replaced by that large fairway bunker and the pump to the left of the green, and that what was that fairway bunker on the right was converted to rough, and the green then now was completely redesigned with new bunkers there to the right of the green. I mean, it's a complete change, and now it's instead of, they say it's a drivable par 4, but, you know, players have to be careful with what they do, but I don't know. To me, the Players was a great tournament. Sewoo definitely was the deserving winner. He was the only one who was playing to win it. Disappointing to see the big stars not show up, really. Louis Heising, I thought he was going to be, like you said, I thought he was going to be there at the end, but nobody seemed to go ahead and challenge Sewoo Kim, and more power to him. I mean, Rafa Cabrera later played great. It's like none of the big names were on the top of the leaderboard, which you would have expected from a tournament that it's always, or at least most of the time, won by big names. So that would be my main take. I'm disappointed that the big players didn't show, and the ones that had the shot at it, like Louis Oosthuizen, Ian Poulter,
just didn't go for it.
Well, you know, when we're talking about big names, Dustin Johnson had a good start on Thursday, but then he shot 73-74 on Friday and Saturday, left him out of contention. He did finish strong with a Sunday 68 to move up 32 spots to finish 212. Rookie sensation John Rahm, who's been tearing up golf courses this year, shot an 82 on Saturday, and then he missed a secondary cut, so he didn't play on Sunday. Rory McIlroy was not really a factor. He cited a bad back. He did go for a MRI on Monday, and the BBC reported that the scan revealed his back was a recurrence of his injury from earlier this year. McIlroy said the MRI scan revealed no new injury, rather a low-grade response to the rib joint I injured earlier in the year. As of now, I'm entered in the BMW PGA Championship, so we'll see. He said he would decide early next week whether he was in a position to compete at Wentworth. The European Tour's flagship event takes place next week, May 25th through 28th. He also, let's see, I don't need anything more from that. But yeah, Carlos, that's pretty much all I have on the players. It was exciting, but I really just felt, watching it on Sunday, I really just felt the players were drained. They just looked mentally washed out to me. They just like, let me get out of this place. I'm whatever it is, I'm done. Get me out of here. That's really what it looked like to me. Except for Sewoo Kim, he was on his game. He knew what he was trying to do.
Yeah, that's what I say. I mean, I didn't like that finish. I mean, it was lacking of. First of all, star power, and that's what attracts a lot of the viewers to see. At least if one of the stars were there contending, that would have been great. And I didn't see enough great play there at the end to be so much interested in trying to find who was going to win or not. So I think, to me personally, it was a disappointing Players' Championship, especially for what you expect. For the best field all year, you expected more. So that's just my take. But anyway, hey, on the other side of the pond, there was action. Of course, all top players in the world were in the Players' Championship, but there was a little tournament there on the European Tour. It was the Open de Portugal, and Matt Wallace, he fired their closing round of 69 at the Morgado Golf and Country Club. He held on to win by 3 strokes. He shot 17 birdies on the first 36 holes and a level par round on day 3, which left him with a 3-shot lead over German's Sebastian Heisel going into the final day. When the Englishman began the final round, he had a 5-shot advantage, but saw that lead reduced to just 1. First by Sebastian Heisel, then by the American Julian Suri, but Wallace, he remained calm. And he made a couple of key birdies at the 13th after a magnificent approach shot. Then at the 16th to pull away from the pack. He finished on 21 under par, 3 clear of Suri, who goes with a 65. And then he became the only the second player on the tour this season to win from start to finish. And just the second winner since 2013 to cart 3 bogey-free rounds on his way to victory. Wallace said that his approach there on 13th was the turning point where he thought, right, I've got this. He didn't see it coming. He never envisioned standing here with the win. But hey, at the end of the day, it was a career-changing win for the 27-year-old. It was Wallace's 5th start on the European Tour, having made the step up after he won 6 times on the Alps Tour last year to gain a place on the Challenge Tour for this season. But with this win, he now has a European Tour card all the way to the end of 2018. Julian Suri from the USA, he made a great last day charge. He carded 9 birdies in his first 15 holes, but his run halted with a bogey on the 17th, and he came up just short. He alluded to the putting as being the difference from him on a day that really he wasn't hitting his best ball. He wasn't at his best in the ball striking. But being able to trust that stroke inside the 10 or 12 feet, because out here you will have so many of those putts that definitely
they made the difference for him, and it was a long time coming for him to at least finish so close. Fred also was another good week for the English golfers in this tournament. Matt Wallace was the champion, but there were another five Englishmen in the top ten. There were Sam Walker, who finished in the tie for fourth, Ben Evans, Mark Foster, and Oliver Fisher in the tie for sixth, and Marcus Armitage. He also finished in a tie for 10.
Hey, Carlos, there was action on the Sumatra Tour this week. Celine Boutier from France made a birdie on the first playoff hole to win the Self Regional Healthcare Foundation Women's Health Classic. Well, that's a mouthful. On Sunday at the Lynx at Stony Point. Paola Moreno from Colombia was also in the playoff. She was the loser. She was actually the leader by two shots heading into the final round, but made the bogey on the playoff hole, and so Boutier won in that playoff. He also then, Boutier wins the first place check of $30,000, moves from 20th in the Volvix Race for the Card money list to second. She has now earned $39,295 in six starts as a rookie. So it gives her the edge to garner one of those 10 LPGA Tour cards awarded to the top 10 of Sumatra Tour at the end of the season. You know, Carlos, I talked to one of the LPGA officials, Mike Nichols, who actually runs the Sumatra Tour for the LPGA Tour, a couple weeks ago, and I asked him why they don't give out more cards on the Sumatra Tour, you know, like maybe 15 or maybe even 20, because they really need more women players on the LPGA Tour to fill the fields. And he said, you know, the results just have not been that good from the women that graduate to the LPGA from the Sumatra Tour. The players, the first-year players that move up, there's usually only one, two, or possibly three that keep their card and stay. And he said they'd like to see more. So for the time being, they're going to leave it this way. But they would like to see a little bit better results from their Sumatra Tour players once they get to the LPGA Tour cards.
I totally agree. I mean, I don't think it's still at that point where the Web.com Tour is, where really those players, or at least most of them, show their potential to be contenders, especially the ones that win. But I totally agree with that. I think they should wait and see if they can see more from the players that are emerging from there. Hey, we're going to now take a look at what's going to happen this weekend, a look ahead. And I'm going to start talking about the PGA Tour, where the AT&T Byron Nelson is going to be near my home here in Irving, Texas. I'm not in Irving, but I'm near Irving. It's going to be played at the TPC Four Seasons Resort at Las Colinas. And that's a 7,100, over 7,100 yards, a par 70, has a purse of $7.5 million. The first prize is $1.35, and it's going to be televised on Thursday through Friday through the Golf Channel, Saturday and Sunday. In the morning, it's going to be Golf Channel. In the afternoon, it's going to be CBS Sports. Sergio Garcia, yes, he's the defending champion, and this field is particularly strong this year with four of the top six in the world, Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, Sergio, of course, and Jordan Spieth, the hometown boy. Sergio will try to become only the fourth back-to-back winner since the tournament began in 1944 and the first since Tom Watson did it in 1980. The other successful title defenses belong to Jack Nicklaus, 70-71, and Sam Snead, 57-58. Spieth's best finish in his hometown event was a tie for 16th in 2010 when he was just a 16-year-old high school player. The tournament is leaving the TPC Four Seasons Resort next year for Trinity Forest, which was designed by Bill Corr and Brent Crenshaw. You know, the top 16 in the world after this week receive an exemption into the U.S. Open. So only 2 weeks remain before the top 50 are exempt to the British Open. So this tournament is very important towards those goals. And just one more thing about this. Sergio's two victories here at the Byron Nelson have been in playoffs. The first one was in 2004 over Robert Dameron and against Brooks Koepka last year. So we expect a great tournament. a lot of great players, and hopefully we can get some star power there in the leaderboard, Fred.
Yeah, the LPGA Tour heads over to Virginia this weekend. Aria Jutanagarn is the defending champion, actually, for the next 2 weeks, first here at Kings Mill and then at Ann Arbor for the Volvic Championship in 2 weeks. Kings Mill has been a stop on the LPGA Tour since 2003, with a PGA Tour stop for 22 years prior to that. So they've had a golf tournament there at Kings Mill for a long, long time. Christy Kerr has been playing very well of late, and she has won three times at Kings Mill since 2005. So the smart money is on Kerr this week. So, Carlos, I don't know if you're doing any betting or your fantasy players. Christy Kerr looks really good to me for Kings Mill this week.
It looks really good. The only thing that I don't like is that the LPGA Tour still has not had a multiple winner, but definitely she's one that I would be looking forward, and I would not have any way out of any fantasy games, fantasy team. So, Leah, look out for her. Hey, there's going to be also action in the European Tour. It's going to be the Rocco Forte Open that is going to be played in Sicily, in Italy, at the Verdura Golf Club, or 7,200 yards, par 71, 1 million euros is the price there. It's going to be televised by the Golf Channel early in the morning, Thursday and Friday, and also on Saturday. It's going to be from 8 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., and also on Sunday from 5 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. So if you want to see it, this field is going to include a pair of Masters champions in Mike Weir and Trevor Immelman. Eduardo Molinari, who won the Trofeo Hassan II last month, is a lead contender from the Italian group of players, the hometown boys there. Also in the field are Matteo Manassero and Nino Bertasio, who represented Italy in the Olympics last summer in Rio. Ryder Cup captain Thomas Bjorn is playing in Italy. This is just one of three new tournaments in the European Tour scheduled this year. Masters champ Sergio Garcia is leading the race to Dubai, while John Ram is number three, even though the 22-year-old from Spain has yet to play a regular European Tour event as a pro. He made his points all through the World Golf Championships and the Masters, but still a lot of the top players are back in the U.S., so it's a average field with some of the good players there in the European Tour. So it's going to be an interesting new tournament there in Sicily, Italy, Fred.
Hey, Carlos, the Champions Tour, it's a majors week for the old guys this week with the Regis Tradition in Birmingham, Alabama. Bernhard Langer, Vijay Singh, and Steve Stricker coming off appearance in the Players last week. Langer is the defending champion in this event, should be a favorite again heading into this week. Vijay Singh played very well at the Players, and Steve Stricker also had a solid week. So we keep looking for Steve Stricker to win some kind of a major. And can he be like Monty and maybe win major two on the Champions Tour? So we'll see. You know, he's been playing good. Vijay Singh's going to have to deal with a new caddy, though, because his caddy decided to Kip Henley, who we know caddied for Brian Gay for a long time, also caddied for a couple other guys over the time. He also played a little bit. He's played a couple of events on the PGA Tour and played a few events on the Web.com Tour, came through the big break. Kip decided to part ways with Vijay even after Vijay had one of his best finishes for a long time last week at the Players. So the caddy things, I'm going to talk more about the caddy stuff later, Carlos, but I just had to get that in there.
Oh, sure. And, hey, watch out. John Daly and Vijay Singh both are coming off victory there in that tour. You know, Singh team up with Carlos Franco, the second most interesting man in golf. In the Legends of Golf, and Daly comes from winning in Houston. Even though Singh has been playing well, he has yet to win an individual title there on the Champions. And finally, hey, there's action going to be there in the Web.com Tours. The BMW Charity Pro-Am is going to be played at the Thorn Blade Club in Greer, South Carolina. It's over 700 yards, par 71. The purse is going to be $675,000 with a price for first place of $121,500. If you want to see it on TV, it's going to be from 7 to 9 p.m. on Golf Channel Thursday through Sunday. Last year, Richie Wierenski won it, but he's not here this year. all I can say about this tournament is, you know, I'll go out on a limb and say that my compatriot, Rafael Campos, will go and win it. I mean, he has had one of the greatest streaks in golf this year after starting the season with no status. He just comes from posting a T3 in Punta Cana, so Fred, I think it's about time for a win for Rafael. So go, Rafael, or like Sergio and everybody says in Spain, vamos, vamos, let's do it.
There you go.
So, any final words on the tournaments that are going to be this weekend before we go on to the Park Farm News?
Yep, I'm ready for the news, Carlos.
Well, we're ready, and as usual, on the Par 5 News, we pick up some nice stories to talk about, and Fred, you have some FedEx Cup news to tee off the Par 5 News.
Yeah, the PGA Tour announced last week that the FedEx renewed its commitment to the Tour to continue the FedEx Cup for the next 10 years. FedEx provides the $35 million bonus pool earned by the touring players over the course of the year and, you know, and throughout the FedEx Cup playoffs. There is some negotiations involved, however. When you're committing $35 million, you want some assurances. So there was some talk of changing the dates for the playoffs. FedEx wants the season to wrap up over Labor Day, reducing the number from 4 to 3 events for the playoff. But for now, everything's going to stay pretty much the same as it has over the past 11 years. Golf Channel has reported that the new agreement did come with a new exclusivity clause for FedEx. Players like Lee Westwood and Louis Oosthuizen, who have sponsorship deals with UPS, would not be allowed to use the UPS logos in the playoffs. I'm not sure. I don't know how they can do that, but that's what they're talking about. Monahan said, all I'm going to say on that front is when you're in business with someone for 30 years and you're about to commit to 10 more, you do some things to protect each other on a long-term basis. That's what we've done in this agreement, and our players know that. Our players understand it. Our players think so highly of FedEx and what they've meant to them in terms of playing financial opportunities, so we do everything we can to protect our partners. The PGA Tour policy on sponsorship standards states, generally, all sponsorships must be tasteful and in accordance with standards of decorum expected of professional golfers. I'm not sure John Daly read that part. Sponsorships by companies whose business reputation or ongoing business activities may reflect adversely upon the image and reputation of the PGA Tour will not be approved. So, Carlos, This just does not look good to me. It just doesn't pass the smell test for me. I'm sorry. I really think it sets a very dangerous precedent. You know, what if MasterCard or some other large sponsor wants to ban their competitors' logos from their events? You know, because FedEx is a sponsor at every PGA Tour stop, does this rule apply every week? So UPS can't sponsor golfers? You know, what about the majors? This just looks like a real can of worms to me. The PGA Tour doesn't want to lose FedEx. They want to give them some assurances, I understand. And that bonus money is really important. But did they really sell their soul on this deal?
You're asking me?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think this little rule has some real consequences. I don't know. I just don't get it. I'm sorry.
It didn't pass your smell test. You don't get it.
No.
Hey, man, that's just about money. I'm sorry to have the money jingle here, but it's about
show me the money.
So very lucky, and you'll see how everything, if they get their share, hey, everything's fair, man, as long as they get their share of money. It's like the taxes. If you don't pass them, hey, no way.
Yeah, I got you. Well, I think we'll maybe see more on this. I think there's got to be some negotiation going on. I think this is a big issue for the PGA Tour. I think they kind of slipped this in there on the rest of the sponsors. So this has got to be that's got to be a concern for a lot of people in the business of golf, I would think.
Share the money, share the wealth. You'll see how everything will work out. Hey, let me talk a little bit about. It wasn't about the ball. It wasn't all about the ball, but certainly that had a lot to do with it. Last Tuesday, Rory McIlroy revealed that he had signed on to play TaylorMade equipment, and that part of the reason for his switch was the company's golf ball. You know, he had said that he had struggled with his ball at the Arnold Palmer Invitational and again at the Masters, and wanted to check out something different. So he was explaining that he worked with the TaylorMade guys one day and started just on TrackMan on the range and so stopped with the golf ball, that new TP5X ball that they have, and thought, wow, this is what I need. This is exactly the thing I've been struggling with. And this is, I feel, is what I need. So, bam, he signed on, you know. But the ball isn't the only alteration in McIlroy's bag. He will hit the company's M2 driver and fairway woods and use a proto 750 irons. He has TaylorMade's wedges with him as well. But at this point, isn't sure if they'll be there when he tees it off in the future. The only non-TaylorMade club in his lineup for now is an Odyssey putter. He's testing a couple of different models from TaylorMade, including the Spider Tour used by Jason Day and Dustin Johnson. He gushed, and I quote, "I've been on tour 10 years, and this is, it's very rare that you get really excited about your equipment, but I feel like it's a new chapter in my life with a lot of stuff going on, but I really feel with the new equipment as well, it's hopefully going to take me to that next level." End of quote. Although neither TaylorMade or McIlroy confirmed it, some reports say that the deal is 10 years in length and worth $100 million for the 28-year-old. I mean, for $100 million, I would be also gushing about the new equipment as well. I don't care what equipment it is. But, you know, for the Carlsbad, California-based TaylorMade, it also means that they now have the top three ranked golfers in the world on their staff, with McIlroy joining Jones, Dave DJ, and Jason Day. And also, they have also 2017 Masters champ Sergio Garcia. Oh, by the way, they had to also sign Tiger Woods in January, although he's not playing that much anymore. But they signed him. But even being that loaded with star power in the course, that didn't change the mind of the Adidas brass. When announced the following day that they agreed to sell its golf brands, TaylorMade, Adams Golf, and Ashworth, to private equity firm KPS Capital Partners for $425 million, about a year after it started shopping around the brands. The brand sale price is evidence, total evidence of the fall of the golf equipment market. I mean, back in 2012, Adidas Golf brought in $1.7 billion in revenue. 4 years later, total revenue was slightly above $500 million. The New York-based KPS manages over $5.7 billion in investments in several companies, and about half of the $425 million of the deal will be paid in cash, with the remainder a combination of secure note and contingent considerations. Fred, that transaction is expected to be completed later this year and is subject to closing conditions and approvals, but this certainly is signaling, at least for those employees there, that there's a period of stability. They don't have to look forward to see what's going on, who's going to buy us, are we going to go out? At least it seems some stability coming their way, Fred.
Yeah, it's been a question. You know, we've been talking about it for some time, over the last year. You know, there were rumors that Tiger was trying to buy it with a group, and there were rumors that nobody really wanted to buy it because they had too many top name stars under contract. And so, yeah, it's good that it got done. $425 million, that just seems like a rock-bottom price to me. I mean, I don't know how they can go wrong. They're only putting half the cash up. So, you know, and TaylorMade's or Adidas is financing the rest. That's a pretty good deal. It looks like to me they're pretty keen on getting rid of it. So, hey Carlos, so let's talk a little bit about social media. You like social media. You're a big Twitter guy. You're a big Facebook guy. You know, the LPGA Tour has embraced Twitter. You know, we talked to Craig Kane about that before on the show when he was with the LPGA Tour. First of all, they've awarded a sponsor's exemption into the ShopRite Classic via a poll on Twitter. Over 28,000 golf fans voted in the popularity contest. Sharmila Nicolette from India won with 39% of the vote. Blair O'Neill was second, Carly Booth third, and Susanna Benavides was last. Nicolette is only one of six Indian women to play on the Ladies European Tour, where she's competed in 64 tournaments. She turned professional in 2009 when she was just 18 years old, and at the time was the youngest Indian golfer to qualify for the Ladies European Tour. She's a 13-time winner on the Women's Golf Association of India. And the 2017 ShopRite Classic is going to take place next week, May 29th and June 4th, at the Stockton Seaview Hotel and Golf Club near Atlantic City. So that was kind of different. They used Twitter to fill out the field. But, you know, social media creates problems, especially for women golfers. There are stalkers and weirdos out there. I know you don't realize that. I know you don't think anybody would do that, but there are some weird people out there on social media, Carlos. Beth Ann Nichols wrote a story for Golf Week about the perils of the young women on the LPGA Tour giving out too much information on their social media posts, and it does create problems for tour security. Just one of the many revealing tidbits that the Tour Security Director Joe Funk said he spends about 60% of his time now on social media related security issues for players. He warned that the women give too much information about their schedules, you know, where they're going to be, and you know, people can find them. You know, there's a case of Michelle Wee. She put just a simple little tweet out one time that she was going to go out early for a practice session at the tournament in Portland, Oregon a couple years back. And at 6 a.m., a guy turns up and asks her to marry him, you know, and wouldn't let her alone. So they had to put him in a hotel and then put him on a bus the next day and send him back to Iowa. And then the guy showed up again in Rochester, New York, and they had to deal with him. Morgan Pressel, she has firsthand knowledge of the interlopers with a stalker that has gone to prison twice for following her and even broke into her home. You know, Pressel said, it's something I talk to the LPGA and younger players about a lot. Stacey Lewis believes she's been passed over. Now, on the other side, there are positive aspects for the young women, especially on the LPGA Tour. Stacey Lewis believes she's been passed over for sponsorship opportunities because she's well below the 100,000 mark Twitter followers. You know, would she even have a Twitter account if it's not for professional golf? Probably not. J. Marie Green earned a notice from a men's fitness magazine when she filmed herself wearing only a bikini and hitting drives on a beach in the Bahamas. But for every plus, there's also a negative or a scary side for the women. You know, and then we're not even talking about, you know, the guy side. You know, we talked about Ian Poulter getting another little tiff with Randall Chamblee on Twitter. You know, we know about the problem they had with Ted Bishop a couple of years ago that cost Ted his job with the PGA of America. You know, so I don't know. This whole social media thing, it's good, it's bad. Carlos, you and I are on it. We use it to promote our radio show. We use it to promote our different businesses and golf here. But, you know, we're always very careful about what we do and what we say. So, you know, it's a good and bad, but for the young women on the LPGA Tour, it can be kind of dangerous. They have to kind of watch what they're doing.
And it's sad that it has to go that way because, I mean, social media right now is the way for communicating outside of the normal and known media that we know for the channels, TV channels and sports commentary and all that. So if anyone wants to get their message across, that's the way to do it. And we know that Ian Poulter knows how to do that very well.
but you know, Carlos, I am a little disappointed, though. I don't know where all these stalkers are at. You know, for me, I mean, I don't have any like 25 or 35 year old women stalking me on Facebook. I'm kind of sad about that. Actually, it's kind of disappointing.
You're like Stacey Lewis, then. You're like Stacey Lewis.
I don't have enough followers.
I have to do something. Maybe, you know, go to the Bahamas and t-shirts and a bikini or something like that.
That would get a lot of comments. That's for sure.
That will definitely. Hey, there's no such thing as a bad publicity, right? So it's just publicity.
In that case, if I were doing that, it would be kind of sickening. I don't know about bad.
At least you'll get people to talk about you, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Hey, Carlos, I can tell you one thing. It ain't going to happen.
I think we would have to close the show after that. So yeah. Please don't do it. Hey, moving on now. English golfers, and this is something that I love. I love this one because I could talk about this one a long time. But anyway, I don't have that much time, so I'm just going to say English golfers, Andy Sullivan and Chris Woods, want to see more players end at one-shot penalties in name and shamed for slow play following the European Tour's inaugural Golf Sixes tournament. I mean, if you might not have seen it, or you have seen it already, that six-hole format featured a shot clock on the fourth hole. Players were initially allowed 40 seconds in the opening session. Before, the time was reduced to 30 seconds for the remaining sessions. I mean, it was like watching the shot clock in the NBA going down. You have to go and shoot it before it goes and hits zero. Paul Peterson was the only player to incur in a one-shot penalty for exceeding the time limit. He breached the 40-second limit in Team USA's half match against Wales, which cost he and David Lipsky a place in the quarterfinals. Sullivan said that he personally just thinks they need to be stricter with it on the tour. That week, everyone was quicker because they knew as soon as the shot clock went to zero, they were going to get a shutout. Whereas in a normal event, you've got a little bit of leniency. Wood said naming and shaming should be part of and parcel of the process. Wood also said that someone got penalized the day before and he was probably humiliated the other day. He also thinks that that's quite a lot to do with it, the naming and shaming. You know, Sullivan is right. There's too much leniency so far. Players are to blame. Hold your hands up there, but referees can be stronger on some occasions, you know. Sullivan said that the fact that only one player was penalized during Golf Sixes was proof that tournament golf didn't have to be played at a glacial pace. Amen to that. It proves everyone can play that quickly. Wood said that the one-shot threat must be real. He added, and I'm going to quote him, "It's knowing there's a shot penalty. A shot matters to world ranking, to Ryder Cup points. That means an awful lot more than any monetary fine." You all know my stance with regard to this, and that is that this is one of the things that I say half golf anchored so far. It's the fact of how slow play is, man. How much time does a player go taking, see, think, see again, rethink, make another look from the same initial side, double think what he was going to shot, go back to his initial think, he or she's going to take, darn, I go to the kitchen, I do some popcorn, get him some coffee or some soda, and the player would still be going again to the same original point of view, man. Move quicker. If it's the same for everybody, there's no advantage for anyone. Let's move it along. I mean, Fred, I agree with Solly and Woody. Start penalizing and naming everyone. Let's get this moving faster. You'll see how much more people will start getting interested in this as the time to be glued on the TV starts to get reduced. People don't want to be so long watching something. And the time it takes to play, it will be reduced as well. I mean, make it the same for everybody so that it works. And like they say, start naming and start doing it, because right now it's really not working.
You know, Carlos, and it doesn't seem like much, but an extra 10 seconds on every shot, and you're taking 3 to 4 shots a hole, you know, that's 30, 40 seconds per hole. So you're talking like 15 minutes to 20 minutes on your round. So you're going from a 4-hour round to a 4.5-hour round, or a 4.5-hour round to a 5-hour round. So it does make that a little 10 seconds or 20 seconds, whatever long you're taking on every shot to make up your mind what you're doing. You know, be ready to hit. Just be ready to go. Let the other guy hit his thing, and when he's doing, you know, get ready. And as soon as he's done, boom, go. Pull the trigger. Walk up to the tee. Don't wait on him. Just go ahead and hit. Let's go. Hey, Carlos, you know, I love stories like this. I just revel in them. You know, we get to see Se-Woo Kim kissing a trophy and pocketing a $1 million check, or we see Sergio putting on a green jacket. But the things we don't get to see are the glimpses into what it really takes to succeed or not to succeed in golf. The stories behind the scenes of golf that Landon Mickelson has been dealing with. He experienced he did a decision that was a huge setback for his golf, and then he battled depression, and he's still grinding and trying to make a comeback in the game. In 2014, Landon Mickelson, who was no relation to Phil, and besides that he spells with a C-H, not a K, who was 22 years old at the time, just out of Rice University, was the 1,034th ranked amateur in the world. So he was pretty far down there. He could play, but he wasn't on anybody's radar. He pretty much was one of the last people in the world you would think had enough game to qualify for a U.S. Open, but after his score of 70 was posted in sectional qualifying, he was in. He was going to be headed to Pinehurst for the U.S. Open. He saw it right away, though. His playing companion had marked an errant score, and Mickelson really shot a 71, not a 70. He shot 71 the first round, and then he had 71 the second round, but the 70 was on the scorecard. So the playing partner had written down a wrong score in one hole, and Landon, who had abandoned keeping his scorecard, hadn't paid close enough attention to correct the error at the scores table. Mickelson said, "Do you ever get in trouble in school when you know you screwed up and you're going to get caught and you're just like, wow, there has to be something I can do to change this?" It was like that. It was full crisis mode. Now we're talking 2014 here. Both his caddy and Landon understood the ramifications. They could not say a word ahead of the U.S. Open, where Mickelson would get to meet all the important people that could enhance his golf career when he turned pro, or he could report the infraction and be DQ'd from the whole thing. He knew what he had to do and reported the mistake and was never heard from again. Another problem, however, haunted Mickelson. He suffered from depression and general anxiety disorder. He managed it well, but now with this extra burden, he was finding it, you know, tougher to deal with. "Most days, I didn't even want to get out of bed. I just wanted to lie down, not do anything, especially if I'd played poorly the day before or I struggled to practice. Why would I get up and go play golf and grind at it again when I knew what I could do with this mood? When people said they were worried about me right after it happened, I thought, that was sweet, but so unnecessary. I was going to be fine. Then I started to realize they had a point. Everything was falling apart, both on the golf course and off." He was practicing and playing golf in small mini tours around Florida. You know, and if you're not in the right place mentally, that's not a good thing to be doing. It's just going to be more frustrating. It's going to add more fuel to the fire. Mickelson had to get his head right, and he knew he needed a change of scenery. He became a volunteer assistant golf coach back at Rice, his old school, and he got to hang around with the young kids, help them, and it helps him get excited about the game again, with their love for it, you know, their passion. And so he took some courses, he studied the mind, and he began working with a mental coach. So Landon, who is now 25, you know, he's kind of like a veteran. He's been around. He's seen the downs. You know, he's back playing some mini tour stuff. He's traveled to some Monday qualifiers. He's played on some of the Adams Tour stuff in Texas and some other satellite tours. He's played in a couple Web.com Tour events. He made enough that he's qualified for the Latino American Q School, which put him in the, and so now he's got status on the Latino American Tour. So, but wouldn't you know, he got injured, and so he's missed the first couple tournaments there. But he's getting better, he's feeling better, and he's back out playing again. So, you know, Carlos, these are the kind of stories. These are the guys that are out there working every day, trying to just make it to the big tour, trying to see the bright lights and the big checks for just a little bit. And so for every Se-Woo Kim and Jordan Spieth that we see, there's thousands of guys like Landon Nicholson out there grinding away, trying to get their head right, trying to get their game right, trying to find them enough money to do it, trying to work up enough energy to go out and hit another ball, to stroke another putt, to, you know, work on their short game. More power to it. It's a name we're going to keep our eye on, Carlos, and I. We'll kind of watch some things on Latino American Tour. Hopefully, maybe he can make it through and maybe make it to the Web.com Tour next year.
I surely hope. You know, that's I love that story that you just brought in. It's something that we should do more. Bring those type of stories of those people. We don't know, because we don't know what the big guys do and all that. But hey, there are a lot of other tours. Like when we prepared the four call, which is a look ahead of what's going to be this week, I also look at the other minor tours like the Asian Tour. There's also action right now in Thailand. The Japan Golf Tour, there's action there in Kyoto in Japan. The Korean PGA for the men, they have the SK Telecom Open. The Challenge Tour for Europe, which is the equivalent to the Web.com. Then the Lucia Costa del Sol, and there's the PGA Tour of Australasia as well, the Sunshine Tour. The women's have the Korean LPGA and the Japan LPGA, plus the Legends Tour, of course, is playing. But those are a lot of the tours that you didn't know. There's a lot of players just like that one that you mentioned there that are struggling and trying to just do enough to play it week in and week out so that they can make it into the bigger tournaments at the big leagues, and say it that way. And it's great that you mentioned this one and brought him out to the light. And hey, we wish him the best, definitely. And hopefully we can keep informing you of all those great stories that are there in all the other tours, those minor tours, as we call them. But with that, we'll wrap up our Power 5 news. Now it's time for the practice range, where every week Fred and I pick a topic, and each of us take our own shots at it. This week, the question is, could government-funded WTA-like golf courses be built with federal dollars? You know, now that Donald Trump is if he's the number one chief, he's a chief, all right, the president is the chief now, so he should be the number one golfer, number one golf fan. So can he help grow the game through the difficult times now and make golf great again, right? That's what we're trying to say, helping with building more courses. So, Fred, what's your take on it?
Well, you know, that was his campaign slogan, make America great again. And, can that be changed in the president now turn his sights to golf and say, make golf great again? Well, you know, we all know that Donald is a fanatical golfer and has helped grow the game through difficult times by buying up distressed golf courses, putting some lipstick on them, and, you know, adding some water fountains and some waterfalls and sticking the Trump name on them and then charging high prices to play them. Well, now that Donald is in the White House, does he have designs on helping the golf industry using government money to do so? Well, PGA of America CEO Pete Bobakwa, in an interview with CNN Money, said, President Obama was good for the game. President Clinton was good for the game. I think President Trump, again, being a proponent of the game, understanding the power of the game, is good. Now, you know, I read that and I said, you know, my BS meter went way off the charts here when I read that. So let's rewind here just a bit, Carl. Do you remember, you know, 2015, let's go back to 2015. Do you remember the PGA of America pulling the plug on the Grand Slam of Golf in 2015? An event that was scheduled to be held at Trump's California golf course due to the fear of alienating a portion of America over the Mexican immigrant statements? Also, there was a lot of discussion around that time of pulling other events, including a PGA Championship from other Donald Trump-owned golf courses. Now, here is Pete Bublakwa, the head of one of the five large golf organizations in the world, doing a mea culpa and telling the world Donald Trump is good for golf. Trump Bedminster is scheduled to host the 2022 PGA Championship. Don't you just love American politics? Your enemy yesterday is your bestie today. I love this. Bublakwa said he feels Trump could be a leader in getting more publicly funded golf courses built in the United States, kind of like President Franklin D. Roosevelt did with more than 250 public courses built under the New Deal. You know, that's a powerful story because those golf courses are open to everybody. They're very affordable, and now we're bringing golf's best and one of golf's major championships to those public venues year after year. We think that's a powerful signal for the game. Well, callers, number one, I'm not sure the country needs too many more golf courses right now. With a declining golfing population and golf courses struggling from the lack of green fees from the public, why would taxpayers be excited about putting tax dollars into building new public golf courses? I love golf. I love everything about golf. But I don't want them using my federal tax dollars to build more golf courses. Thank you very much. Here in my home area in Toledo, we have 6 private golf clubs and 25 public golf courses in about a 30-mile radius. This is simply too many for the number of golfers in that immediate area. I know of one course that has already announced it will be closing at the end of the year, and I fear 4 or 5 more are very close to pulling the plug. If you have a public golf course that is serving a particular area, so let's take, for example, they're building this new public golf course in Chicago, and Tiger Woods has been contracted to build it. Well, did they want to use federal money along with local tax money to be used to fix the course or to, you know, make it more affordable for the locals? The plan in Chicago is to take 2 existing courses, one upscale public and one that's a little bit lower that serves a lower income clientele with cheaper green fees, and make one big upscale golf course with Tiger's name on it that he gets $several million to do. You know, the locals are going to be priced out. They're going to have to go find someplace else to play. They're not going to be able to afford it when it's done. I agree. It would be great to have more golf accessible, especially in inner city areas. But I am also sure I do not want federal tax dollars used to build more golf courses in the United States. So, Pete, if you want Donald to use your tax dollars to build more golf courses, I don't think it's going to happen. But you can keep trying, buddy.
You know, the most obvious example of WPA golf construction undertaken by the WPA is Bethpage Black. So I think also Prairie Dunes, which baffles me, this is a private course. But I would take it this way. I have to agree with you. I don't think we need more golf courses. But if you're going to spend some money, why not spending it on getting people playing the courses that are already there, which are suffering from not getting the green fees? You know, if you're going to spend money, rather, you know, spend it with maybe paying those fees for people trying to play more golf. Hey, I'm going to play some, I'm going to pay some rounds for people that you're trying to get into the game so that they can undertake it more. But definitely, I don't think it's a good idea, and I don't think it's going to happen anyway, even with Trump being the president, that we're going to see more golf courses, especially with, like you're saying, they're just trying to survive right now. But I like your take on Pete Bublakwa. Really, now, they know that they need it. And now that Donald is on top, now, oh, yes, we need you, and you're going to be great. You're going to be great for us, trying to take a little bit of his good side. But I, like you, I don't think it's going to happen, but I'll give them an idea. Spend the money better on paying the rounds on the courses that are already now there so that you can help them. And that way you'll help the whole golf economy go and grow again. That would be my take on that.
Yeah, just to say one more thing, and we had a great discussion today with Andrew Barrett, the head pro here at Brown Deer Park Golf Course. And it is a municipal golf course. It's owned by the county. The county actually owns 15 facilities in and around Milwaukee County here. And they make money on them. They don't use tax dollars to subsidize. Everything they do is done, you know, out of their profits or from what they make. And he realizes, just like Dr. David Bronner realized in Alabama by building the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail in Alabama, it tripled Alabama's gross state product. Went from $1 billion to $3 billion because it brought in new industry because of those golf courses and those facilities were there. And he understands that if they improve the golf course and they get more people to come, they're going to sell, more beer. They're going to sell more sandwiches. They've improved their restaurant. They've got good chefs. They've got people coming there to eat. They're trying to get more outings, get more, you know, and then improve the golf course. And they want more people when they come in to play Whistling Straits and Sand Valley and Erin Hills. They want them to stop by and also play Brown Deer County Park. So, it can really help your overall economy by bringing golfers into an area because they're the people that have the money to spend on some of this other stuff. But I'm still not for using federal tax dollars to build more golf courses, Carlos.
We agree on that one. With that, we wrap up our practice range, and now it's time for our VIG, our very important guest of the week, and Fred had the opportunity to talk to the legendary Great White Shark, former world number one, Greg Norman. And Fred, tell us a little bit about what we're going to listen to in this interview.
Yeah, well, as we know, Greg Norman is going to be honored as he's going to be the honoree at the Memorial Tournament here in a couple weeks down in Columbus. And they had a luncheon a couple weeks ago, and Greg was there with Jack Nicklaus. And so we were able to talk with him for a little bit, ask him some questions, I thought he gave some great answers to some questions that the guy fired out, and I asked a couple questions, and it was really great to talk to him. He was very engaging, very forthcoming. Really a joy to talk to, actually. I really enjoyed it quite a bit, Carlos. So go ahead and play.
Let's play.
The interview began by asking Greg if he still played a little golf, does he enjoy playing the game, and what place does golf hold in his life right now?
I didn't ever want to be a ceremonial golfer. And you realize that, you know, to go up against these young kids nowadays, you know, you got to keep practicing. And I've hit nearly 5 million golf balls. I don't need another 5 million. So it's a very easy decision. On top of that, I have the other side of my life, which is my business. And I love it. I love growing the business. I love where it's at. I love the future of it. So, yeah, you have to commit to that just like you commit to the game of golf. And so it's not a hard decision for me. Last year I played 5 rounds of golf. This year I played 5 rounds. Yeah, opening golf courses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Nothing, look, I'm thinking of playing in the father-son with my son at the end of the year. And if I do commit to that, then I'll start practicing 6 weeks beforehand just to get the rust off, get the rotation there. You know, it'll be a lot of fun with my son. We played him a couple of times. We haven't played him a long, long time. It basically went up against the chartreuse. So that's probably the next time I play golf. Actually, that's not true. I'm opening a golf course in about a month. One in Australia and one in Mexico, and so it's all coming up pretty soon.
Next, he was asked about Sergio Garcia's big win at the Masters and what that might mean for him going forward.
I was actually overseas. I was on the plane all day Sunday, so I didn't see a shot. And when I got to my destination, I watched a little bit on YouTube, and I was really happy for him. And I texted him. I said, look, that's the way to run through the finishing line, right? Which he did. And, you know, I read a couple of articles about where he dedicates, you know, his fiance motivated him, calmed him down, whatever it is. But, you know, it's great to see because he has had a tough run at it, right? He really has. And some self-inflicted, and some of it's his attitude towards it. And, but it was good for him to step up. And I think it's a really good barometer for every other young kid. If you can see somebody like Sergio can win his first major at the age that he's at, that's pretty impressive, right? So all the young kids who haven't won one can say, hey, I've got this time period if I stay committed, if I stay on course with what I want to do. And so where he goes from here, I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Greg was also asked if he was ever concerned about being the best to have not won a major, the tag that Sergio happily gave up by winning the Masters.
I don't know why they do that. The media does it. We don't. I mean, obviously, when you get to a certain level as a professional, that's your ultimate goal anyway, is to win a major or win more than one or win as many as you possibly can. And myself personally, that was never really a driving force because the media thinks I was the best player ever to win a major. I just wanted to do it anyway because, like I said, it's hard climbing a ladder. Every time you got a little better and better and better, that rung got higher and higher and higher, right? And then you got to get there, and then you got to maintain it. That's why it'd be interesting to see what happens to Sergio. At such a late age, you know, to do what he's done, it could be a springboard for the next one, maybe 15, 20 majors. Mm-hmm. Or it could be I've done it, I've achieved it, I'm going to go off and enjoy myself a little bit more. Who knows? Who knows?
You've been so successful in business, and you seem to enjoy it so much. You know, what may be in golf that has helped you in business?
Simple, due diligence. Golf, you had to practice. That was your due diligence, right? You identified your weaknesses, and you build on your weakness to make them a strength. No different in business. You do all your due diligence. You understand what space you want to go after. Are people in that space? If they are there, what are they doing right and what are they doing wrong? Then you try and work around that potential void or that opportunity. So you can be disruptive and go right after something, or you can go into a space like I'm doing. Our go-to-market launch in October of this year is in virgin space that nobody else has ever gone into before with the game of golf. So I'm excited about launching that. It's going to be launched in third quarter of this year, but my partner is Verizon. We've signed up for a long-term partnership, not just in the game of golf, but in a lot of other opportunities, and it's all the innovative side. I love kids' education. I love to see what we can do with that, especially in my home country, Australia. Again, it's identifying that space that you're passionate about. And if you're, like I was passionate about golf, so I stay focused on it, and I build on it. I was lucky enough to do okay at it. I focused on business. It was all vertically integrated with golf to a degree, and now I've shifted. I was a sports marketing company, and now I'm a B2B, B2C company. So now I build a platform off the space that I identify and I want to go after. So
you had the idea of a world golf tour long before it really became a reality. What do you think of today, the PGA Tour now having an event in South Korea, expanding the borders with Canada, Latin America, China, really trying to go after a world market?
Well, I think the European Tour did that way before the PGA Tour did. And I think they're just reacting to the European Tour growing on a global basis. Right? When you look at, go back and look at the history of the European Tour, they started into Asia, they started into Australia, they started obviously through Europe and Eastern, Middle East and all that stuff. So they were the first ones to really recognize the global opportunity. PGA Tour were a little late to the game, but they had this beautiful corridor which was vertical. There was a longitudinal line from Canada, Central America, South America. So they obviously focused in on that. We were one of the first. We were the first PGA Tour event in Mexico, which is a golf course tournament we were involved with, the golf course I built, and now they're branching out. So it was a logical step to do it because the game of golf is truly global. You know, congratulations for it. It's not a true world tour, though. And that's, you know, you can't make them both the same. I think one day there would be an opportunity still to do that. I think it's probably, in my opinion, I'm not getting involved with it, but in my opinion, it's probably more on the women's side with the LPGA. I think they have a wonderful
world tour.
A true world tour. I think they really, really do. And just looking at the depth of the players on the LPGA and the number of countries that are represented, and those countries that are represented, massive. Take Korea, for example. I mean, there's 65 million golf people in Korea, South Korea, and there's 30 million golfers. Nearly 50% of them.
And there you have it. That was Greg Norman's interview for it, and that was right to the point on all those issues, especially the surgery, his business. I liked what he said about the discipline and the due diligence, and he really has been successful in that. He had that talent. Greg, great interview, Fred. Great interview there.
Yeah, he was a lot of fun to talk to. And when I asked him that question about, you know, what he learned in golf that translated over to his business, I mean, he lived like a Christmas tree. He jumped right on that. It was really great. He was really engaging on it. And, our time was brief that we got to talk to him, but it was really good. And he was wonderful. You know, this is a nationwide children's hospital event in Columbus, and so they honor the children's hospital there, and there's a bunch of kids there that have gone through a lot of illness and difficulties and cancer and different things. And he was really great with the kids. I mean, you know, he was engaging with them, he was talking to them, and talking with the parents, it was fun. It was a fun interview. I really enjoyed the day.
It was a good one with Greg Norman, the great white shark, number one in the world, legendary golfer. And with that, we wrap up our BIG Very Important Guest of the Week. Now we just have a few final putts to get in before we close the show. And I'm going to talk about a guy I never talked about in this show. It's the first time I'm going to talk to him. Talk about him.
We have to do a weekly Sergio segment for you, Carlos. I have to always make sure we put that in there.
it was like Donald Trump was it's almost a regular on our show. Now Sergio,
right,
after his win in the Masters, he's becoming a weekly edition now. So Sergio Garcia, you know, he hasn't been shy about sporting his green jacket since his major breakthrough last month at the Masters. But the one place that he won't be wearing it, you know what it is? His wedding. He's scheduled to marry Angela Aikens in July, and fresh off his Masters victory, he left the door open about donning one of golf's most coveted prizes on the couple's special day. But apparently, that point was reached sometime before this last week's Players' Championship, as his tune on the topic was noticeably different when he reached he was reached recently by USA Today Sports, and then he said, you know, there's a place for everything, but my wedding is not one of them. So, Fred, you know, for once, I am here with Sergio. There's a place for everything. And besides, Sergio, hey, that's your day, man. Wear whatever you want, gold jacket, pink jacket, striped jacket, green jacket. Who gives an opinion other than Angela? It's worth a penny. So, enjoy your great day, big guy, man. Wear whatever you want.
You got that wrong, Carlos. It's not his day. Wear what he wants. It's his future wife's day, and you will wear what she wants you to wear. That's, you got to get that right, Carlos. Don't make that mistake. Hey, you know, I mentioned earlier we got caddy issues on the PGA Tour, and you know, I like to talk about caddies. You know, caddies and their players change all the time, and we just don't know about it. But this Grayson Murray guy, who's a PGA Tour rookie, he's making quite a name for himself, and not because he's really playing all that well. It's, you know, the caddy changes he's had, and you know, even if he got into the Masters, he was going to ask a Playboy bunny to be his caddy there. So I'm sure, boy, that would have got their attention at Augusta. They'd have liked that really well. You know, Murray's latest episode featured him firing a veteran caddy, Mike Hicks, mid-round on the final day at the Wells Fargo. Hicks was on the bag for Payne Stewart in the 99 U.S. Open. He's looped for Greg Norman, Justin Leonard, Steve Stricker. You know, so Hicks knows a little bit about what he's doing. Well, Hicks and Murray got into an altercation after Murray bogeyed on the eighth hole at Eagle Point. And so on the next hole, Hicks just dropped the bag, handed the caddy bib to, actually it was Murray's agent who was in the gallery, and he just walked away. He said, you know, he said, I've had enough of this crap. You know, you're on your own, bro. And also, you know, we just saw, you know, I talked about Kip Henley dropping or getting away from BJ Singh. They ended their brief hookup. And now, a year after winning the Masters, Danny Willett was fired by his caddy. Jonathan Smart, who had been a lifelong friend of Danny Willett's, quit as his caddy after a disagreement at the RBC Heritage the week after the Masters. You know, things are a bit stale and kind of fizzled out, Willett said, despite it apparently being Smart's decision to end the partnership. And he went on, it's a shame, but things happen and change. Everything happens for a reason. So, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, these guys, they're under a lot of pressure. Every shot, a lot of pressure, you know, and the caddy's there and he catches the brunt of the blame. You know, even if the player, it still falls back to the player. But, you know, to see things like Phil Mickelson and Bones, the relationship they had over there, the relationship that Tom Watson had with his caddy and some of the longer lasting relationships with caddies, it's really unusual because they've changed quite a bit. Hey, Carlos, quick to a humorous little piece here. After Pat Perez ran a campaign to find Danny a girlfriend, and that replied to Danny Lee, you know, after he won a couple years ago, Perez took it upon himself to launch a campaign on Twitter, Find Danny a Girl. And by golly, Danny Lee has found somebody. He announced that he's been traveling with his fiance. Excuse me. She helps him stay away from his single friends and, you know, and not having too much fun with the other guys on tour. And so, but he's really enjoying the tour life much better. He's going out to dinner with the other couples and she's been supporting him and he's feeling a lot better about things. So here's a contest. Now, this is a contest that we want to enter, Carlos. You want to get in on this. So if Brooks Koepka makes a hole-in-one at one of the 10 events they've chosen, Michelob is going to give a fan 95 cases of Michelob Ultra. 95 cases, Carl. At the rate I drink beer, that would last me for a long, 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 way longer than I'm going to live, to be quite honest with you. So the 95 cases will be spread out over the next 4 years, but, you know, you go get them, Brooks. If you make a hole in one, somebody's going to get a bunch of beer. Carl, that's all I have for tonight's Back Nine Report.
I can't imagine. I don't drink beer, so I would have to donate it somewhere. But anyway, Back Niners, that will wrap up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VAG, very important guest of the week, the legendary great white shark, Greg Norman. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also, you already know it, Roku TV is where you can see us. Follow us there and watch for the Back Nine Report. And if you haven't done so, hey, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back Nine Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We always wish you to be happy, be blessed, and best of all, enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Mom deserves the very best. And with a little help from Albertsons, it's easy to make sure she gets it. For a special surprise, stop by the floral department and get a great deal on one dozen roses as lovely as Mom herself, just $9.99 a bunch. Pick up On the Vine cluster tomatoes, only 97 cents a pound. And for a sweet celebration, get Bluebell ice cream, half gallons, $3.99 each. Limit two. Fresher finds, sweeter deals, happier celebrations. Albertsons, it's just better.